Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the show. My name is Dan Hafner. Super excited for today's episode. We've been on a roll lately with, a bunch of different platforms we've been talking about. A lot of really cool guests. Have another awesome guest by the name of Douglas Squirrel, who I'm going to introduce to you here in a second. I'm really excited to talk about this topic of Douglas is a CTO, Chief Technology Officer. He's been in this field for a very long time, managed a lot of software teams. Kind of all the ups and downs of, we kind of talk about this whole thing of technology is a people game ultimately. So I'm really interested to get his take and see what he has to say about this stuff. But before I bring him on, as I always start the show, if you like the show, if you're listening to this, watching this, wherever you are, please take the time to either subscribe, like, rate, review the show, share it with anyone who you think might find value from it. That helps us grow, that helps the algorithm, it helps all the things out there. So whether you're listening on Spotify, watching on YouTube, Facebook, LinkedIn, whatever, please like and subscribe and leave a rating. That would be much, much, much appreciated. All right. Well, with the business end out of the way, welcome to the show, Douglas. How you doing?
I'm doing great, but I have to correct something because I used to be a CTO, but I'm now sort of a CTO talker, a CTO helper. So I do an awful lot with CTOs and other people whose titles start with C. And I help them make their technology teams insanely profitable. So I kind of generalized after the first 50 or 100 clients that I worked with to be more broad and to not do it, but help people to do it.
Okay. Gotcha. Well, that makes a lot more sense. So who do you normally like work with then? Is it when you talk about technology teams, are we talking small teams? Are we talking big teams? Kind of everything in between?
You name it. So I've worked with technology teams of hundreds, technology teams of one, and everything in between, and all the people who work with them. So those include the folks like the head of product, the data science lead, the head of, I worked with the chief scientist at a very technical biotech firm. So people were doing technology, but not like yours and my kind of technology that we're used to so much, not mobile devices, but mobile health. And then all kinds of people who then work with those folks and often find them difficult to work with or are difficult themselves, like head of sales, of course, the CEO, and people in operations and customer service. So I get around. I get to talk to everybody.
Very cool. Well, speaking of that, what do you find is, I used to, I kind of do my own thing now, but I, was on a couple of tech teams, did some QA for some stuff. I kind of have my own ideas and opinions of how, tech teams were in like all the different nuances and working with the people in technology. It's a different world. I always say I kind of reserve the right to make fun of developers because I used to work with them all the time. So, because people are like, oh, developers. And I'm like, well, yeah, they are a different breed of people.
Definitely.
So I'm curious, right out of the gate, like what's like the most interesting part of working with people in this? Like, what are some of the common themes you see that keep tech teams from being able to work together or be profitable or anything like that?
Well, I'll tell you two. One is avoiding difficult conversations, and the other is accountability. So I just literally got off the phone with someone I'm coaching who had both problems, that he's trying desperately to do some very innovative technology work, and he wants to be accountable for it, but people keep asking him at a level that's not helpful. So I was talking with him about raising the level, giving people language that they could use to ask him in a better way, because they keep asking him about GPT-4 and model weights and things like that. And he says, I don't think you understand that with the best will in the world. And I bet you got it in a mobile world where people would say, why don't we update to Android, cookie version or whatever it was? And you'd say, hang on, what business problem are you trying to solve? And that structure for accountability can be really helpful. We can talk more about it if it's interesting. There's a bunch of stuff you can do to make sure that you as a tech person are accountable in a meaningful way and that other people allow you to be accountable in a way that actually works for them. But then more fundamentally, the other difficulty is avoiding difficult conversations, because what he hasn't done is said to anybody, hey, you bozos, you keep asking me about this stuff way down here. Could we please talk about the strategy? And very understandably, because they're not being very welcoming. But the real trick, the real thing that unlocks tremendous value is when you can have that kind of difficult conversation and point out a pattern that you observe, whether it's in this accountability area or in something else, and find a way to deal with the problem that's unspoken. And there's so many unspoken problems, partly because those folks on the other side of the table often say, I just don't understand the language. I mean, you can throw a few words at them and try to dig in, but man, I just don't understand fundamentally what this is. And they all keep talking about Star Trek and Star Wars, and I don't know the difference. So man, these very different, very complicated people over there are taking most of my budget, and they're doing a ton of things, and I just kind of hope that it works. And they're avoiding a difficult conversation about, hey, I don't understand what you're doing, and I'm really frightened by it. And the other folks are avoiding a difficult conversation about, hey, wait a minute, you keep asking me detailed questions, make no sense. And everybody keeps careening along until they fall off the cliff. So those are the two.
Interesting. No, I can see that. So what I thought of when you were talking about that was, you know, this, I difficult conversations, I think, are a common thing in business and marriage and in a lot of things, right? Like we kind of all kind of avoid that contact type of stuff kind of naturally. I think some people are naturally like want that type of thing, but you know, that it does, collision creates creativity, right? It creates progress. And I think people in this space can tend to, we all kind of tend to think highly of ourselves. We all have egos that are involved in things and stuff like that. So what's interesting to me, at least in my experience, is do you actually see that as a common thing between like the management level? Because I, you know, I've talked with some people even recently on the show that, like, I was like, hey, what's the biggest thing you learned in building your tech platform or things like that? And they said it was learning how to communicate. It was learning how to actually communicate clearly what I wanted to have build and what I wanted developers to build and what I wanted those teams to build. So do you see that as kind of like, you know, like from a founder down to their developers, or from a management level down, is that kind of how that commonly shapes out?
Oh, absolutely. And the skill gap is on all sides. So it's you might think, oh, well, it's those engineers. They kind of forget to shower, and they're all, you know, nerdy people with pocket protectors. They can't talk to anybody. CEOs, founders, heads of sales, boards of directors, they have just as much difficulty. And they have that difficulty across the board. So I coach a lot. That's why I really branched out from really just helping the tech team. I said, man, actually, there's so much more you can do for everybody. And there's, if you make the changes on both sides, if you make it on all sides of the communication gap, you make a much greater progress much more quickly, although it's more difficult. So I have difficult conversations all the time. And I have loads of fun doing that. I got a huge blast out of talking to this guy I just got off the phone with. But lots of people don't. So I have to help them with techniques for that. So I'll show you two things. One is a book I wrote with my friend Jeffrey Frederick, Agile Conversations. I'm not trying to sell this book. Anybody wants this book, just write to me, send me your address. I'll send you a free copy. Just because I'm not trying to sell books. I want people to know techniques which are in this book for things like test-driven development for people, which is a method of having a difficult conversation that I was teaching this guy, so that he can start to have those higher level, better conversations with the language that's meaningful to the business folks. And then the other thing I'll show you is under my desk. I think I've got it down here. I have to dig a little bit. But that is, and for people on the phone, I will, if you're listening to this, I'll describe it. It's a certificate, nice gold seal, very official. It's issued by the Royal Society for the Protection of Interrogatives, and it's signed by me if I send it to you. Again, I will send this to anybody who wants it. And it gives you the right to ask questions of software developers and diverse other technologists, including, what are you doing? Why are you doing that? Can I see the results? When will it be done? And why don't we do this instead? And the thing is that so often people need something official to feel like they can ask us technologists dumb questions. And another thing this guy was just telling me is that there's one person who's really good at asking dumb questions. And I said, have you told him that? Have you praised him? He said, oh, yeah, I haven't quite remembered to do that. I said, go tell him. The dumb questions are really helpful. And I send the certificates to people just to remind them that it's tremendously valuable to ask those questions. And you have the right to do it. The fact that we have this kind of special lingo and kind of special culture, and we sound different, doesn't mean you can't ask tough questions. And so I try to give people techniques in the book and little reminders like the certificate to help them feel more, a little more comfortable having those difficult conversations.
I like that certificate. That's awesome. I might have to get one of those.
Well,
That's
send me your
really,
address. I'll send you one.
that's cool. That's very cool. Well, yeah, I mean, I see that happen a lot too, you know, because I mean, it's very easy for us to, you know, like if, when you're an expert in something, I think a lot of people forget that, you know, I remember one of the very first guys that I ever worked with online, he would say, if you can't explain it to a fifth grader, whatever you're doing, it might be marketing, it might be anything like that, you don't really know it. Like that was kind of the expert level of like, hey, you can come down. But I think a lot of us aren't in the habit of, and sometimes that can come off as condescending of like, hey, I'm trying to like take this super complex idea of how this system works or whatever and explain it to you. And like you said, when you work with people maybe at CEO level, CTO level, like when somebody's trying to dumb that down for them, that can, like, if you're not careful, that could probably come off as condescending. But it also, like, it kind of has to be at that level, because when you go, when like people glaze over very, very quickly when you're just talking about, you know, coding languages or, you know, back-end software things, or like, you know, different things that like somebody at that like type of level might not really understand.
They're not really sure how to spell API, but they know it's important.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, man, that's really, really interesting, because I think there's a lot of like, so what do you teach people in terms of like that communication, like how to bridge that gap, you know?
Yeah. Well, let me teach you one. So have you ever done something called test-driven development? If people are listening, they don't know what this is. Don't worry, I'll explain it. But I'm just asking you, Dan, have you ever done this thing called test-driven development?
Yes. Yeah.
So I'm going to teach you the version for people. And I don't care whether you like the one for code or not. There are people, it's got like Marmite. People either like to eat it or they don't. And I don't care. I happen to like it, but it doesn't matter. When you tried it, I imagine you had the following experience. Man, I'm going slower than I normally do, but I'm really quite sure where I am. And with less technical people, I'll often compare it to walking along with those crampons and those sticks that you use when you're walking through snow and ice. And, you know, you move more, or snowshoes, you know, you're walking along more slowly, but you're less concerned that you're going to slip and fall. Whereas if you went running across the snow, you might fall down. And so test-driven development for people has a similar feeling, that you're feeling your way at each step. You know, you're kind of reaching in. Oh, there's a crevasse there. I better go right, you know, and avoid this thing. Or, man, I'm learning that this isn't the way to go. And the conversation is slowed down and has a lot of questions from you. And you follow a series of steps. I won't bother you with every single one of the rungs on the ladder of inference. That's the fancy name for it, is there's a ladder of a chain of thinking that you're trying to follow with the other person. But I'll give you an example. So it might be that you are building a new mobile app for somebody, and you'd really like to understand how people are going to log in. You want to understand what the purpose is, how people are going to authenticate, what privacy issues there are. And if you just came in and said, hey, here's a standard login method, this is what we use, this is how it works, you'd be operating at the top of the ladder. You'd be talking about what actions to take. But what you do instead in this situation is you say, so I observe that we have lots of different types of users. Is that correct? That's a piece of data. Like, you can measure how many different types of users there are, and they might surprise you. That would be a red test. So they might say, actually, for this mobile app that you're building for us, there's only one type of user. There's only the administrator. This one won't be used by ordinary users. That would be wonderful to find out at the first stage. It'd be really, really helpful. Mm-hmm. Because your assumption, the thing that you were believing when you came into it, was incorrect. And if you just come in and said, hey, we're going to build a single sign-on, it's going to have all these access control lists and have all these fancy things, you would have missed it completely. And that's how people build a lot of dumb software, right? They overbuild it because they don't check their assumptions. And then you move from that and you say, so, okay, and let's say they do confirm there's several different types of users. Then you say, okay, so it seems to me that an important part of that is that a selection that you might make out of that piece of data is that those users have different demands, that they have different ways of using the software. Is that right? You notice at each stage I'm asking, is it right? And as you ask more and more questions, as you go up the ladder, you'll get to more and more difficult areas. So these are pretty easy. This is like what's happening in the world. But as I move along the ladder, I might ask, so what does it mean for people to be able to get onto this software quickly, to be able to access it in a simple way? Well, if they access it quickly, they can give better medical care. Oh, this has an important medical impact. I didn't realize that it's actually used on the floor of the hospital. Well, yes, actually, these doctors are using it, and it's very important for them. I'm making this all up as I go, of course, but I think you get the idea. Then further along, you might say, well, my belief about that is that speed of access is paramount. Is that right? Well, yes, but it also has to be secure because we can't compromise the medical data. And as you build up your picture of what they're doing, according to all these steps, eventually you get to the action. And the key thing is that as you're building up either an action you might take or an action they might take, you actually understand all the steps that got you there. And you can imagine if you're discussing something difficult, like why the software stopped working and killed a patient, or why these the mobile app didn't work for an important sales demo or something like that. If it's a difficult conversation that you want to understand in some depth, these steps really make you have that feeling of walking across the ice, of the crampons, the snowshoes that help you know where you are. And you get a very clear understanding of how the other person sees the situation, which a lot of us don't bother to do. And we run along at the top of the ladder operating on actions, and we don't really get the information we need. So there's a brief summary. There's loads more in the book, and I've written a lot about this idea of test-driven development for people or the ladder of inference.
Very cool. I like that. So maybe this is redundant. I'll just maybe ask you this. One thing I wanted to add, I see. We met on a platform called PodMatch, as many of you have, I know. I'm a huge fan of. And if you haven't got on PodMatch yet, you should definitely do it. Shout out to PodMatch. So on your thing here, yeah, absolutely. There's a piece in your thing. It says you made every mistake in the book. Then you learned a set of techniques called action science. Is that a little bit related to what you were talking about? What is action science?
Well, very closely related. I don't get a lot of people actually reading that and asking me about it, so I appreciate it. It sounds very esoteric or strange, and you think, why on earth is Squirrel talking about this weird thing? Why isn't he talking about like the latest version of Android or something? But hang on, because it's really valuable and it really is science. But my co-author and I discovered, with the help of some other very clever folks, this kind of ancient theory back from the 1970s by a guy called Chris Argyris, who was a social science professor of business science, something like that, at Harvard, maybe Yale, I forget which, but one of the Ivies. And he'd written these books that nobody could understand. And they were very abstract, very theoretical and academic. But they had gold in them, like this technique that I was just teaching you, which has tremendous application. You know, I teach it to almost everybody that I coach because it builds so much trust. It builds so much information in a very short time. But it was kind of locked up in these academic papers and things. And there had been some really good efforts to bring some of it to the world. A famous one is Peter Senge in The Fifth Discipline. Another guy called... I'm forgetting the name, but the book is called Difficult Conversations. It's the Harvard Negotiation Project. It's a few folks. So there's been several attempts and several people. Roger Schwartz is another one. So there's a bunch of people who've written about this in a more comprehensible way. But nobody had written about it as it applied to the difficult conversations in technology and in agile software development and building mobile apps and all the other wonderful things that we do. When it was so tremendously applicable, because it's a science, it's a sequence of steps that you can follow to deal with a conversation. Hey, us engineers, we love those. We love a recipe. We like a run book. We like something that tells us the steps to follow. Whereas a lot of management books and books on how to be a good leader and so on tell you a lot of anecdotes. They tell you, you know, a famous one is Lencioni, The Five Dysfunctions of a Team. He tells you five things that go wrong with teams and why teams should not do these things, and tells you all the disasters that happen. And he says, thanks very much for buying my book. He never tells you what to do about it. He never goes through and says, here's how you could actually fix it. Whereas here was a recipe book that had all kinds of wonderful ideas. And we tried them out in our own practice. I use them all the time now. built up a collection of ways of explaining it, like test-driven development, and then wrote the book. So that's what action science is. It's some tools for having better conversations that really appeal to everybody. They're clear steps, you know, like they're like the for dummies books. They're the clear version of what to do, but they particularly help with technologists.
Interesting. I like it. Okay. So another question I have, I failed to mention this at the beginning. You are in the UK, right?
I am. I talk funny, but I'm English. That's how I like to describe it.
And
I'm here in my 600-year-old house. So I'm surrounded by sheep.
I saw that. That's crazy. Like from what, like 1450 or something?
That's when my house was built. Absolutely.
Dang. How many
and you'd be surprised how many great anecdotes I get for coaching from wandering around my neighborhood of 8 houses and meeting the sheep. There's tremendous stories there.
That's crazy. That's really, really cool. Just an interesting side note. Mm-hmm. I've never met anyone that lived in a house that old. That's awesome. So I guess, like, you know, being in the UK, I mean, have you noticed any, I guess do you notice any like cultural differences between teams maybe in the UK, in the US, other countries that you've worked with, something like that? Is there certain, you know, cultural differences, different trends you see with teams in different areas of the world at all?
It's a different expression of the same dysfunctions. So I work around the world. So I have several clients now in Africa. Africa is really blowing up right now, and lots of amazing stuff happening there, especially in finance. I've had clients in Australia, all across the US, in all across Europe, Israel, you name it, I've had somebody there. And the common theme is the things I was describing to you about lack of accountability, not giving results fast enough to get feedback, not giving incomplete results quickly enough to get feedback on them, and avoiding difficult conversations so that we can actually resolve problems. Everybody has that problem, but they do it differently. So British people have this tremendous reserve, so they want to be very nice to other people. Americans and Israelis are to different levels, and Australians are more vigorous about it, but they tend to operate at the top of the ladder. So they just say, hey, go do this thing, fix that, do the other thing, without ever inquiring, without ever finding out what's below. And the British are just quiet. And the Indians on the Indian subcontinent tend to just salute and say, yes, sir, and say that they'll do it, which all three are dysfunctional. None of them work. Being silent, saying yes, or saying, I want you to do this. None of them work. What you need is the difficult conversation. So that's what I'm always coaching people on.
No, that makes sense. It makes sense. Like we all are the human species, and we all have the same problems, just in experience it in different ways. You know what I mean? That's very interesting. So,
and Argyris found the same thing when he did his academic work. He found that the same dysfunctions, same problems, and the same ways of fixing them worked across conversations in all cultures.
Yeah. Yeah. Makes sense. Really does. Okay. So, you know, for someone listening, maybe they are a CEO, maybe they have a smaller business or a larger business or whatever. You know, if they're diving into the world of managing a tech team or thinking about doing that, do you have any recommendations on, you know, landmines to avoid? If you could go back and, you know, redo some of the things from, you know, when you were first beginning, what would you tell your old self? Like, is there any golden nuggets of wisdom you can drop on us at all?
Well, I certainly can. And I'm just going to check something. You can cut this out if you want, but there's a conversation happening on the other side of this very thin wall. And I just wonder, can you hear it at all? Is it
a little bit, but it's not.
Let me just ask folks to be a little quieter. Apologies. I told them, but they might've forgot. Hang on.
Okay. No worries. Well, until he comes back, hope you guys are getting some value out of this. This is really, really interesting. I'm really like.
Apologies.
No worries.
These walls were constructed out of dirt and sticks in the 1450s, so they were not built for Zoom.
Yeah, so, yeah, I wouldn't think so.
If it gets loud again, tell me, and you can cut this out if you want to. Okay, resuming to answer your question, the golden nugget that I would really point to, the thing that I think makes such a huge difference for so many teams, is that frequency of feedback trumps everything else. accuracy of results, speed to market, building the right thing, all of those things are much less important than just getting something in front of customers every single day. And when you can get to that discipline where on a very, very frequent basis, you are showing something that's horribly embarrassing, that's totally not working, that doesn't have any of the things that somebody asked for, but you still show it to them and you say, how terrible is this? And they say, it's slightly less terrible than yesterday. That's when you know you're really on to a winner. And so many folks, again, they're avoiding difficult conversations, say, I can't touch this until it's all finished. I got one client where I'm really pushing them to do this method of daily delivery. I call it Elephant Carpaccio. It's a name from Alistair Coburn, a very great thinker, and I've developed it a lot more. I'm pushing them all the time to say, okay, show this to your customers, get some feedback. And they say, but we know we've already asked the customers what they need and we've got it all written down. It's right here in all our user research. I said, but show them what you've actually done, because what you've done may not match what the what you've written down. You may have done perfect user research and built the wrong thing. You may have built something that is feasible within your software, but not what the customer needs. And so if I could go back in time to myself, I would say to myself, please, please release that now. Release whatever it is, show it to people, get feedback on it. The feedback that you get will be 1,000 times less bad than what will happen to you 6 months, 12 months, a year, 3 years from now, when you finally release it and everyone tells you the collective set of things that you got wrong and then built on top of. So the cycle time is the single most effective metric when I do evaluations of teams for investors and others. How quickly can you get from I have a cool idea to a customer told me whether my cool idea sucked? And if you can make that time as short as possible, and typically I aim for a day, then you will be much, much more successful in any type of software.
Wow, very cool. No, that aligns with a lot of other things we've talked about on the show too. So that's really, really good. Mm. So
awesome. And mobile apps, of course, are a wonderful place for that because you're right there in somebody's pocket. So and they're also a terrible place for it because you have to keep waiting for the app store, which drives everyone around the bend when they try to do this. So you've got to do things that allow you to make live updates and rapid changes and progressive web apps and all kinds of other tricks to try to get the speed of feedback. Because if you wait for the app store in a competitive market, other folks will get around the loop faster. They'll get more feedback more quickly than you will, and they'll out evolve you.
Mm, interesting. Very interesting. Yeah, that's really, really good. Really, 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 really good. So let's talk about this here in the last couple minutes. You have this really cool community that I'm really interested to check out. It's called Squirrels Squadron.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about that. Cause that, I mean, one, it's a great name, just straight up. That's just a great name. But tell what's the Squirrel Squadron?
Yeah. So what I noticed is there are lots of communities of CTOs. There are lots of communities of operations folks, of sales folks. There are lots of people helping all of those people to improve. And as I was telling you before, I really broadened what I did because I saw that there were all these conversations happening all over the place in between all of these people, and I could make a huge difference for them. And I said, there's no place where these people are talking to each other. There's no place where they're learning from each other about what all this technology means, how they could use it more effectively, how they could get this accountability, how they could get around the cycle time quicker, how they could have difficult conversations. I said, well, I should start that. So I did. It's my way of giving back. It's all free. So I run free events every week. I'm doing one later today on how to make your software incredibly fast. So I do these live in Zoom calls and on live streams and things. There's a forum where people are asking questions and debating topics and so on. I got somebody earlier today saying he was asking about this frequency of delivery. He said, didn't that distract people because they were trying to get something out every day? I said, yeah, it distracted them. It slowed them down, but it meant they didn't build the wrong thing. And that's overall much better because they might be fast at building the wrong thing, and that doesn't help so much. So you'd rather get the feedback more quickly. Then there's a weekly newsletter from me where I try to say provocative things and annoy people. So this week I'll give you a preview. I'm talking about a guy who gets around the cycle very fast to make really obnoxious and strange physical objects, which he sells as novelty items. So he wrote a book which is called What Men Think About Other Than Sex, and every page is blank. and he started selling it before he had it printed. And a lot of people bought it, as you can imagine. They wanted to know, what do men think about besides sex? Now, you might have an opinion about whether that's a good thing to do or not, but he's trying to provoke
Isn't it
you. He's
the
trying to...
Roman Empire? Isn't that what they say?
Maybe, I'm not sure. I don't know, but it's a funny thing. It makes you laugh, and he can get it out there really quickly, and a lot of them don't work. So he tries a lot of things before he hits one that makes people really entertained. So I write about that stuff. I have the forum where people can ask me questions, and I have the free events. So if anybody's interested, come along to squirrelsquadron.com, sign up. We're having a good time, and we have a few thousand people in there now. So lots of interesting conversations and fun events.
Yeah, I commend you on that. That's really, and it goes back to what we started this, you know, conversation around. I think there is a game of isolation and stovepiping, you know, that word of stovepiping of in this industry big time, I think. And so that's good to, I've even noticed that myself, just personally from an anecdote for me, like, you know, the more I've joined different communities, I've joined free communities, I've joined paid communities or coaching things or whatever. And the more that I engage in those, the better, you know, the better I see just myself growing, the services I can provide, the things I can do. So, yeah. And I think we're social creatures by nature. And there was a time where I really retracted and isolated. But now when I learned to just come back out of that, like things just, they change. So I really encourage people to check that. I've not checked it out myself, but I will definitely be going over there. So I'm excited to check that out and see what it all involves.
Certainly welcome.
Awesome. Awesome. All right. Well, do you have anything else to add before we wrap this up at all today?
I don't think so. I'll just repeat that I'm happy to send stuff to people if they're interested. Just send me an address for if you want a book or a certificate, allowing you to ask questions. Dan, you're going to make sure to give me your address so I can send one of those to you. Really would love to see people on the Squirrel Squadron, because that's where I'm learning a ton. And I really want to help other people improve their conversations and deliver faster.
Yeah, absolutely. Such a great idea, such a great platform. I'm really excited to check that out. So, my biggest takeaway from this, I don't know about you guys listening, you know, this avoiding difficult conversations, you know, that really is. And I think it's not just in the tech field. I think we can all apply this to our life. You know, like there are, whether you're married or whether you have children or whether you know, family type of stuff, you know, it really is. And it's not the most comfortable thing to do, but it's just like you said too, like there's, you know, you think about a wound, you think about something that, like, if you don't address like a paper cut, like it can get infected, right? And it's the same thing. If there's underlying issues, I've been in this situation where I used to work where there was, you know, personality conflicts. We didn't get along. I didn't get along with a boss I worked with. And I let it fester for a long time. And it got to a point where it was like, this is not working for anyone involved, you know, instead of just
That's
addressing
it. Don't
let
it get that far. Have a difficult conversation today. That's my mission for everybody listening.
I like it. I like it. Have a difficult conversation for today. That's everyone's mission. All right. Awesome. Thank you so much, Mr. Squirrel. Appreciate it. Everyone check out Squirrel's Squadron. Really, really cool. Interesting.
Just to be clear on spelling, it's Squirrel Squadron, just so you don't mess it up in the URL. So
good catch.
It is mine, but it is called Squirrel Squadron.
Squirrel Squadron. Yes. It's a little, yeah, with the S. There's a lot of S's in there. So we'll have the link in the show notes.
Type it into Google. They'll find it. Yeah. And look in the show notes. There we go.
Exactly. Exactly. All right. Well, thank you so much, Mr. Squirrel. And we will talk to you hopefully soon, and hopefully see you over there. So, and then that's going to be it for me today and for us on the show. Really appreciate all of you again. So again, be sure to like, rate, subscribe, review, anything like that, wherever you're listening or watching the show. And really appreciate you. All right. So we'll talk to you guys next time. Until then, we'll see you later.